Our next case on the docket is 21-1878, Burns v. McDonald. Mr. Dojike, are you ready to begin? And did I say your name correctly?
Yohakis, Your Honor.
Yohakis, got it. Thank you. Please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Kenneth Yohakis for the appellant, Julia Burns. We are here today because the VA willfully destroyed the only evidence that can prove or disprove whether Mrs. Burns was entitled to toll the time to file her application for DIC benefits when her husband died in November of 2000.
I thought that the VA was agreeing that that request for a flag existed and taking that as true, that a request had been made. So what does it matter that that document no longer exists if everybody agrees that it was submitted?
The reason it matters, Your Honor, is because the VA has promulgated two regulations. The first is 3.150, which says when notified of a veteran's death, the VA has an obligation to forward for execution an application for benefits and tell that potential applicant the time that they have to file the application when there is an apparent entitlement to benefits. And so the reason...
They agree, though, that there is a letter that was submitted that informed them of Mr. Burns' death, but that it was not apparent that he was entitled to any sort of compensation. So they're not relying on the failure of Ms. Burns to notify them of Mr. Burns' death.
No, Your Honor. But when we look at whether there is an apparent entitlement to benefits, not only do we look at whether the veteran may or may not have been receiving benefits, which if he were, she would have been entitled to at least the last month's benefits. And that issue, by the way, is not before the court. But also they have to look at the communication from Mrs. Burns in conjunction with the rest of the record to determine whether that raised or demonstrates an apparent entitlement to benefits.
You think that that letter may have said something about his medical conditions?
We don't know what it says, Your Honor, and that's the crux of the issue. The VA destroyed it, and so now the VA is simply guessing that it said nothing.
Isn't it like a form letter?
There is a form involved, Your Honor, when requesting a burial flag. And then there was also a notification of his death. We don't know what form that took. It could have been just the application, or it could have been a separate letter. It could have been any amount of information that Mrs. Burns put in that notification. And again, we don't know, and the VA is simply guessing and assuming that it said nothing important. But we have to have that evidence, and they destroyed it when they initially adjudicated her claim for benefits. Sometime after 2012, they can't even tell us when that happened. Presumably, as best as I can tell, it looks like when they granted her a claim, they sent it for scanning, and then after that point, it was destroyed. The decision that granted her benefits off the 2012 application doesn't mention it, doesn't tell us anything about it. And by the way, just in my experience, those kinds of forms are kind of kept in separate locations, at least in the paper record world, whereas today a lot of those will be found in the electronic world. But there are still...
Is the information in electronic form now?
No, Your Honor. And that's the issue. The board made a favorable finding that she notified the VA of his death and requested a burial flag, which we know, based on their law, their regulations, 3.1p, that it has to be a written request. And she had to have notified them in some way, presumably in a written form as well. That is not in the electronic record. The government, the VA, has not pointed to that. We cannot find that. And the government's and their argument asserts that it simply destroyed a duplicate record. But a duplicate has to also exist in original form. It's not in the electronic record.
Let me ask you another question. The ultimate issue here is apparent entitlement. And the government argues in its brief that we lack jurisdiction to address that issue because it represents an application of law to fact or a straight fact determination. And you did not respond to that in your reply brief. Do you have a response to it now?
Your Honor, the response is that by application of the doctrine of spoliation, it creates a presumption under law that as a matter of law, this court must presume, or the law presumes, that the destroyed records demonstrates her apparent entitlement to benefits. So there's no fact-finding involved. The doctrine of spoliation, as we understand it, is a legal presumption, just like any of the others that exist, that whatever was in the record, the destroyed record, is to be presumed to be in her favor. And that's really what we're, Your Honor?
I was just going to ask, can you remind me what the ruling was below on the doctrine of spoliation?
At the Veterans Court or at the Board, Your Honor?
Well,
the board did not address it, and the Veterans Court likewise did not address it.
Was it raised before them?
Yes, Your Honor. We raised it to the board in our briefing. And that is appendix, starting on page 27 of the appendix. We also very thoroughly raised it to the Veterans Court, although we don't have that in the appendix. The Veterans Court passed on it because they asserted that because this is in the context of Q, there's really no reason for us to address it. But we did raise it to the Board of Veterans Appeals, and the Veterans Court did not rule on it.
Do you have cases where the Veterans Court or this court considered spoliation issues in the context of Q?
There are none, Your Honor. And so this is really the crux of it, that they destroyed the only evidence. We don't know what it is. It can as likely be in her favor and demonstrate apparent entitlement to benefits as it cannot. But again, the VA has to be held accountable for their willful destruction of the record.
What exactly is the record that was destroyed? I want to get a firm fix on that.
Again, Your Honor, we don't know. We know that it at least included two things. One, a request for a burial flag, which would have been on their form.
Right.
We have been unable to identify or locate that version of the form that was used in 2000, but it probably looks substantially like it does today. The other is a notification of death. We don't know, again, what form that included. Because it was included with the request for the burial flag, we can assume, I think, reasonably that it was in some kind of written form. It could have been as part of the application for the burial flag.
Do you think that it could have said that would have resulted in the VA having satisfying the statute of having apparent entitlement to benefits at the time, especially given that the statute that was at issue, the presumption regarding Vietnam veterans that's at issue here did not cover ischemic heart disease at the time of his death.
There are any number of benefits that would have been available aside from the presumption on herbicide exposures.
Could you give us a little bit more detail about what you think that notice of death could have said about his condition that would give this apparent entitlement?
Well, it could have said, one, that she, don't forget that as a wartime veteran, the surviving spouse would be entitled to a pension benefit as well. And the Veterans Court's case law, and I think many of the regulations, treat a request for pension as a request for compensation for the survivor as well. So she could have said, look, my husband's passed. I relied on him for income. I no longer have income. And if she meets, that would be, demonstrate an apparent entitlement to a pension benefit, which is income-based and based on the veteran's wartime service status. So she could have communicated that.
But that's not what you're seeking here, right?
Well, Your Honor, no. We're not asking for pension. Okay. What we're asking for is that the presumption that whatever she communicated demonstrated an apparent entitlement to benefits, so that the VA was required to forward her an application. That's it. They could have forwarded her an application. She could have applied or not, and then been granted or denied.
What evidence do you have that the destruction was actually willful?
The letter that they sent, Your Honor.
But there was, you're not saying there was any malevolent intent.
No, Your Honor. No, it wasn't done for the purpose of hiding anything. But the case law doesn't require that. The case law on exfoliation requires only that it be, that it have a culpable state of mind, which exists when VA acts, and I'm quoting here from Residential Funding, knowingly, even without intent to breach a duty to preserve, or negligently. And their letter to me, when I requested a copy of the records, very clearly demonstrates, and that's at page 26 of the appendix, that they destroyed it. They said so. A review of the rec systems indicates the veteran's original claims folder was sent to records management system sometime in 2012. However, they advised the folder has been destroyed. And the only available records are in the electronic file.
Is the determination of the doctrine of whether the doctrine of spoliation applies a legal determination? I think it might be an application of law to fact.
I think it's a legal presumption, Your Honor.
But in determining, I understand it might be a legal presumption, but the question of whether spoliation applies, that's a question of application of law to fact, right?
You mean insofar as whether the records were destroyed?
Yes, whether we should apply. You're asking us to apply the doctrine of spoliation, but I think that might be an application of law to fact, which you're asking us to determine.
To the extent that it is, Your Honor, then we would ask that you remand back to the Veterans Court because they did not address this issue. And I think that the legal ruling we can get from this court today is that exfoliation would apply, could apply in a Q context, and that the Veterans Court needs to now go back. And again, there's a lack of a lot of there's a lack of the both the Veterans Court and the board just plainly ignoring our arguments and saying, well, it's too hard. It was what I read the Veterans Court willing to say, so we're not going to do it. And so, to the extent that there is any law to fact of whether in this case it applies, we would ask that you order the Veterans Court to apply it and make a ruling that we could make a ruling on that.
Okay, you're into your rebuttal time.
Yes,
you want to save it?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Mr. Carhart, I hope you can hear me. Are you, please proceed when you're ready.
I can hear you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Mrs. Burns' appeal should be dismissed or alternatively, the Veterans Court's decision should be affirmed. Mrs. Burns' husband died of ischemic heart disease in 2000. According to the board's fact finding, Mr. Burns didn't apply for VA benefits during his lifetime, but because of a 2010 regulation that created a presumption of service connection for Vietnam veterans who suffer from ischemic heart disease, Mrs. Burns was awarded dependency and indemnity compensation when she applied for it in 2012. Mrs. Burns received a retroactive award dating back 1 year before her application, pursuant to Section 5110G, which governs awards made pursuant to liberalizing changes like the 2010 regulation. Mrs. Burns cannot show that the Q challenge she raises requires that her effective date be earlier than it was. First, this court doesn't possess jurisdiction to entertain Mrs. Burns' appeal. This court explained in Westbury what the phrase apparent entitlement means. The Veterans Court relied on that definition in adjudicating Mrs. Burns' appeal. Mrs. Burns hasn't raised any challenges about the...
Yes. And have you seen over here?
Yes, Your Honor.
Can you also address whether or not there's jurisdiction over the spoliation issue that was just being discussed with opposing counsel?
So what the Veterans Court said, essentially, is A, the violation of Section 3.150 cannot be Q in any event because it's analogous to a duty to assist violation, which this court held in Cook can't be a basis for Q. In addition, the Veterans Court also affirmed the board's decision that essentially it would have been harmless error. Any error that was made with respect to Mrs. Burns' files would have been harmless error in the sense that she can't show it was outcome determinative. And that is so because of the nature of 3.150, which both the board and the Veterans Court discussed. So 3.150 makes the duty to forward an application contingent on the veteran showing, or the veteran having apparent entitlement, or the claimant having apparent entitlement or entitlement to DIC benefits. At no point has Mrs. Burns given any reason that the information that might have been in that burial flag application could have changed the result here. The reason is, first, as the court has noted, the reason Mrs. Burns received DIC benefits is because ischemic heart disease was made presumptively service-connected in 2010, which was long after the 2000 or 2001 burial flag application would have been submitted. And second, the only other way in which she could have shown entitlement to DIC benefits would be through 3.22, 38 CFR 3.22, which we discussed in our brief, which applies only when the veteran has applied for benefits during his lifetime, which Mrs. Burns herself said in her application he didn't do. So those are the ways in which DIC, one can show apparent entitlement to DIC benefits. So whatever information the burial flag application would have contained, it wouldn't have been relevant to Mrs. Burns' claim. Now, what Mrs. Burns' counsel says in oral argument today, which I believe was the first time he raised this possibility, that it might have included some information about her income that would have entitled her to a pension benefit. Now, that's pure speculation. But even putting that aside, that might have led VA to have a duty to send her an application for pension benefits, but that's a distinct duty from the duty to forward the DIC application. So that's our first argument. And for the same reasons that keeps the court from possessing jurisdiction over this appeal, it also leads to, if the court does find that it possesses jurisdiction, the result that the Veterans Court's decision should be affirmed on the merits, because
Mr. Gohart, I understood, maybe I was wrong, that Judge Cunningham was looking for your views on whether we have jurisdiction to consider the spoliation issue. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought that was what she was interested in. What is your response to whether we have jurisdiction to address the spoliation issue?
So in essence, Your Honor, to boil it down, the board or the Veterans Court found that any error related to Mrs. Burns was harmless error because it wouldn't have been outcome determinative. So in that sense, the Veterans Court's holding is premised on a finding that spoliation would not have affected the outcome of this appeal. Now, if the court disagrees with that, the same arguments and the same response I just gave to Judge Cunningham would also result in affirming the Veterans Court's decision on the merits.
Mr. Gerhart, do we have jurisdiction to review the question of whether spoliation would not affect the outcome in the case? Is that a legal question or application of law to fact?
Our view is that would be an application of law to fact. What Mrs. Burns is arguing is that the Veterans Court should have applied the spoliation doctrine differently under these circumstances. And our position is that whatever legal construction can be given to spoliation, the result here wouldn't be different because Mrs. Burns cannot show apparent entitlement to DIC benefits such that the VA had a duty to forward her an application. In addition, even if the VA did have a duty to forward her an application in 2000 or 2001, Mrs. Burns still can't establish that there was Q in the 2012 decision. First, as the Veterans Court noted, under Cook, Q has to be outcome determinative, has to be based on the record before before the RO at the time the decision was made. And this is similar, the failure to forward an application is similar to a breach of the duty to assist, and that we don't know what would have happened if we'd forwarded an application to Mrs. Burns. Generally speaking, she would not have had entitlement to DIC benefits if an application had been forwarded to her. So she wouldn't, at that time, she wouldn't have been eligible for DIC benefits based on everything that we see in the record. But moreover, there's just no way to know what would have been different. So because any error would not have been outcome determinative, that too is an independent basis for affirming the Veterans Court's decision. Mrs. Burns' brief, she raises section 38 CFR 3.110, which she argues counsels in favor of tolling the effective date. In the board's decision, the board noted that effective dates are controlled by section 5110 of the 38 USC. In Mrs. Burns' case, the applicable provision was 38 USC 5110G, pursuant to which she received a year of retroactive benefits, which is exactly what she was entitled to. And there's no basis for saying that 38 CFR 3.110 can toll the effective dates that Congress established in 38 USC 5110. What 38 CFR 3.110 does is explain in instances where a veteran or a claimant has to do something within a particular time period, how that time period is calculated. So, for example, if a veteran is told or a claimant is told that they have to file evidence within a year or else their claim will be abandoned, 3.110 explains how that period is calculated. But Mrs. Burns doesn't cite any evidence or any authority for the proposition that 3.110 alters the effective date framework set out by Congress in 38 U.S.C. 5110, which the board faithfully applied here. And then finally, we also argue in our brief that that spoliation generally, if the court does reach the issue of how spoliation should have applied here, that this, as one of Judge Cunningham's questions, I believe, recognized, the courts have not applied spoliation. This court doesn't apply the spoliation doctrine against the VA. This court expressed concern about doing so in the Cromer decision, based on the fact that it would undermine Congress's requirement that veterans present and support a claim for benefits, and the fact that Congress, while creating a number of other presumptions, did not create a spoliation presumption. So that would be an independent basis to reject Mrs. Burns' argument. If the court has no further questions, we ask that the court either dismiss Mrs. Burns' appeal or affirm the Veterans Court's decision.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Carhart. Mr. Dohakis? Oh, I'll wait.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have several points, and I'll try to get through all of them. Number one, we cannot forget that had she applied for benefits and been denied, under the Niemer effective date rules, when the ischemic heart disease was added in 2010, they would have looked back to the 2000 claim and granted her effective date based on that application. That's number one. Number two, the government asserts that she had to establish entitlement, apparent entitlement to DIC benefits. The regulation only says benefits. There's a number of benefits that are available to a surviving spouse. There's last month's accrued benefits. There's last month of any compensation. There's pension benefits and DIC benefits, in addition to some others. And there is binding case law. And as I said earlier, I think that there are some regulations that treat an application for pension as an application for DIC, depending on the circumstances. And again, the Niemer effective date rules equally treat a pension benefit, a pure pension application, as one for compensation when there is an ischemic heart disease or a covered herbicide disease. I want to highlight again that the content of whatever records were destroyed is all speculation on both sides. We don't know, which is why we're asking this court to provide a remedy by ruling that spoliation does apply. And we would, of course, be happy with the ruling. And again, the Veterans Court only touched on 3.150. We think that ruling, we didn't get to it here today, but our briefs lay out why that ruling is incorrect. It is not a duty to assist error. The government acknowledges that. It is not something that...
What's your best case to say that we have jurisdiction over the spoliation issue?
Well, Your Honor, Cromer, the court addressed whether spoliation can apply. We think that we've distinguished from Cromer. In Cromer, they were looking at two presumptions, one of which doesn't apply here because the records were not negligent. There was no negligence involved. But mostly in Cromer, the appellant was looking at a presumption that the missing records proved entitlement to benefits. That's not what we're asking for here. All we're asking for here is that the missing records established entitlement to benefits so that they had to give her an application. A very simple task of just handing her, mailing her, giving her an application, phoning her, saying, hey, we think you might be entitled to something. That is all that we're asking in the context of this appeal to the extent of a presumption under the expoliation. And I am out of time.
Did you want to make any other points? We took a little of your time, so if you have another sentence or two you want to add, feel free.
Yes, Your Honor. So to 3.150, the government asserts that it merely creates an incomplete record, which is not true. Again, had that been triggered, they would have sent her an application or been required to. 3.110 very specifically says, and I'm looking at B here, the first day of the specified period in A, which is the time limit for any action, including the filing of a claims, shall be the date of mailing of notification of the action required and the time limit thereof. This regulation very clearly articulates a tolling of the time to submit her application until they tell her, here's the application and here's how long you have to do, to present it. And if we can get the at least to that extent, the Veterans Court's ruling overturned, and then perhaps a remand on the expoliation should the court find that it doesn't have the ability to address it here. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. The case is submitted.